I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we now know more about a man who unloaded his gun into a Washington State Patrol trooper, and his criminal history will not surprise you. Plus, Democrats with a not-so-clever move to try to bribe voters into keeping the Climate Commitment Act. Also, a King County judge lets a 12-year-old armed carjacking suspect off on electronic home monitoring. Was it the right decision? That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at Undivided. DividedPod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Jason Joshua Posada, that is the man who has now been charged with shooting a Washington State Patrol trooper multiple times. And Jason Joshua Posada, to me, is an example of everything that's wrong with our criminal justice system right now and everything that's wrong with the direction that the majority party is taking Washington State in. Unchecked, one-party rule, prioritizing criminals over everyone else, over law-abiding citizens, over the safety of our communities, over the lives of law enforcement officers. Charges came down on Posada, and I want to get into his criminal history in a moment. I don't think it'll come as a surprise to anyone with an ounce of common sense what the criminal history looks like of a man who's willing to unload a gun into a state trooper. So Posada's been charged with assault in the first degree with a firearm enhancement. Let's hope prosecutors don't just dismiss that and drop it like they do everything else. Unlawful possession of a firearm in the first degree and theft of a firearm. I'll say, I'm sure you guys are wondering why not attempted murder. It's complicated. I've dealt with these cases before where that's a common question. Assault in the first degree with a firearm enhancement actually would bring just as stiff as a punishment as attempted murder, and the burden of proof is lower. So, I mean, you could argue that, hey, what he tried to do is kill this trooper, but if you're looking at, let's make sure that we nail him to the ground, assault in the first degree with a firearm enhancement, he's going to end up in prison for just as long, and the burden of proof isn't as high, if that makes sense. So just a little snippet of what happened to show you how egregious this is, because remember, what this was initially was a suspected DUI. And then the trooper also realized that this guy was in a stolen vehicle. So started a pursuit, ended up cutting it off. Guy bails into a neighborhood. And then ultimately, the trooper with Posada's in a ground fight. Posada unloads his own gun into the trooper. And I just want to pick that up in court documents. It says, the defendant attempted to escape the trooper, who attempted to pull the defendant over in a stolen truck. Instead of stopping, the defendant struck another motorist, then ran away on foot with the trooper chasing him into a residential area. The trooper and the defendant began to struggle, and at one point the defendant pulled out a handgun and shot the trooper at least 5 times before the trooper collapsed to the ground. The defendant then stole the trooper's duty firearm, and as an afterthought, while walking away from the downed trooper, fired additional rounds at the trooper as he lay wounded with significant injuries to the legs. The fact that that trooper is alive is miraculous, given how many times he was shot. And this also shows an obviously callous disregard for human life. In my estimation, that was an attempted execution. I'm not sure that the charges themselves reflect that, but given, you know, the preponderance of the evidence, this is what prosecutors have gone with. Now to what won't come as a surprise to you, his criminal history. A criminal history check for Posada shows he has at least 8 felony convictions. Robbery 2, assault 3, theft 1, theft of a motor vehicle, possession of a stolen vehicle, attempted burglary in the second degree, attempting to elude law enforcement. I would also note that at the time he was arrested for shooting this trooper, he had an open, outstanding Department of Corrections warrant for robbery in the second degree. And in fact, that's the only reason they were able to hold him in custody, because prosecutors didn't get the case charged soon enough, or his first appearance didn't happen quick enough. So they were like, going to have to cut the guy loose because, you know, constitutional rights. But thankfully, he had this DOC warrant for Rob II that they were able to hold him on. So again, criminal history, not a surprise in the world. You know, you've got possession of a stolen vehicle, theft of a motor vehicle on his criminal rap sheet. He's in a stolen truck when the trooper tries to pull him over. And, you know, there's a lot of things, obviously, that point to how this is a breakdown in our criminal justice system. I mean, someone with 8 felony convictions, at that point, I just think you lock him up and throw away the key. But the stolen vehicle element of this is really indicative of a larger problem that we are facing. You know, you have an initiative right now to restore reasonable police pursuits back to closer how they were before the 2021 legislative session. And a key sticking point in that debate has been whether just the act of stealing a vehicle, of stealing property, should warrant the possibility of a high-speed chase. And Democrats believe that it doesn't, most Democrats. And that was one of the fundamental changes in the law in 2021, that they look at a stolen vehicle as, oh, that's just a property crime. You know, police chases are very dangerous, as they are. Everyone knows a police chase is dangerous. Anytime you're going through whatever at high speeds, of course it's dangerous. That's why sometimes, even before you change the law, law enforcement decided not to engage in them. But this idea that someone who steals a vehicle is doing that because they want the vehicle, like they want a car to drive around, and that's the only reason they're taking it, that they just want like a joyride or something, and that the only impact of stealing a vehicle is that someone loses their property, is so out of line with common sense. I don't know how else to get it across to Democrats who continue to cling to that idea. People who steal vehicles and who are stealing them right now in Washington state, I don't know how many more stories you have to have. They're using those vehicles to commit other crimes. We have another story coming up about a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old who are out there armed, carjacking people. You have vehicles that are used for smash and grab burglaries. You have vehicles that are being stolen by people with lengthy criminal histories who do not care about human life. It's this false choice that has been sort of set up that, oh, we can't pursue someone in a stolen vehicle because as part of that pursuit, that stolen vehicle, as they're fleeing, they might hit an innocent person. They're going to go on to kill innocent people anyway. Obviously, we need to try to make sure that innocent people aren't dying. But the idea that if you don't chase someone like this, someone like Jason Posada, that, oh, the only, if you don't chase them, it's just a car that got stolen, no big deal. They're not going to go on to hurt anyone else. They're not going to go on to commit other crimes. This is a guy who is willing to empty a gun into a cop. And if it wasn't going to be that cop, that state trooper on that night, you think this guy with this long rap sheet wasn't going to go on to commit other crimes and hurt other people? And it took me right back when I, you know, when we got the documents on this guy, when we saw his criminal history, when we read that he was driving a stolen vehicle, it took me right back into my anger and frustration last legislative session over some of the things that Democrats said when they were debating a possible fix to the police pursuit law. You know, I was reminded of Senator Yasmin Trudeau, who again, just, oh, this is just a property crime. It's no big deal. If somebody stole my car, I wouldn't want police chasing them because that could put people at risk.
If I had a choice between preserving the life of an individual in a crosswalk or on the corner or on the sidewalk playing in the street versus getting my car back, I would give up my car every single day. And that's what I think that we need to focus on, is what are we pitting against each other? The sanctity of human life versus a vehicle.
You're not, that's a false choice. You act as if, and I don't know if it's just you're being oblivious, you refuse to just, you know, I don't know, turn on the news and watch the news and read about what's happening. The idea, again, that if a police officer pursues someone, then that is putting the public at danger versus not pursuing someone And that not putting the public at danger, not getting people like this into custody is putting the public in danger. The state trooper who's sitting with 9 holes in his body from entry and exit wounds at Harborview Medical Center is a pretty good indicator that not getting these people, these type of people, into custody is putting the community at danger. Because if it hadn't been that trooper, like I said, it would have been another member of the community who would have been victimized. And these troopers put themselves in harm's way, so it isn't another member of the community that's victimized. They make that sacrifice and you turn around and treat them like the enemy, like they can't be trusted to make a decision in the moment about what is best for public safety. This trooper is like Swiss cheese at Harborview because he did something that he believed was in the best interest of public safety. And they got this guy into custody, this career criminal. And right now he's sitting in a jail and he's not going to be able to hurt other members of the community, which he would have gone on to do. And there was Senator Monica Dingra, if you remember, you know, all the roadblocks she was putting in place last legislative session to try to stop, you know, the state from going backward in her estimation on police pursuits, and accused all of us, if we were opposed to the law that they put forth, of just being too emotional about it.
I think this policy has become so politicized that people are no longer looking at data or best practices. They're having an emotional reaction to it.
You're damn right we're having an emotional reaction to it. You are damn right we're having an emotional reaction to it. And if you're not having an emotional reaction to it, you don't belong in the state legislature. If you're not having an emotional reaction to the impact of your police pursuit law, if you're not having an emotional reaction to 12-year-old Amber Goldday, who was struck and killed while walking across the street from a sleepover by a guy driving a stolen landscaping truck, who wouldn't have been on the street in the vehicle that day had police been able to pursue him previously. If you don't have an emotional reaction, Senator, to a 12-year-old girl being hit and killed and her friend being left for dead next to her friend's corpse in a ditch, then I don't know how to help you with that. If you don't have an emotional reaction to the fact that there's a Washington State trooper sitting at Harborview Medical Center who's lucky to be alive, I don't know how to help you with that. You're trying to protect the state against things that could be. Oh, well, maybe if troopers pursue these people, if police pursue these people because of stolen vehicles, well, maybe somewhere down the road they might hit someone and maybe someone might die. We're not living in the land of maybe right now. We're living in the land of stuff that is happening, of reality, of people who are dying, of people who are being victimized because people are choosing to steal vehicles, sometimes in armed carjackings, and they're choosing to use those stolen vehicles to perpetrate other crimes that are far from property crimes. And if you don't pull them over and pursue them and chase them simply because they're in a stolen vehicle, you are allowing them to go on to continue to victimize people in our communities. And that cannot be the place that we're at in this state. That cannot be something that we simply accept. And Democrats in Olympia cannot continue to cover, to provide cover by drawing these false equivalencies for criminals like Jason Posada. Because that's whose side you're taking. When you say, oh, we can't pursue stolen vehicles, too dangerous, you're taking the side of the guy who shot a state trooper at least 5 times. You're taking the side of the guy in the stolen landscaping truck who killed Amber Goldday. You're taking the side of the criminals who steal a vehicle and back it into a place like Dunn Lumber without any care or concern for whether they'll hit any employees in the process. That's not hyperbole. That's whose side you're taking. You're not taking the side of the public at large. You're not taking the side of law enforcement. You're not taking the side of safety. And you're not taking the side of law and order. And you should be ashamed of yourself for providing criminals like this cover. I would also note there is an initiative, obviously, that would seek to restore some power to police in deciding whether to pursue criminals. I believe voters will pass that in November. There is a hearing, though, next week on it in Olympia. And it's not too late for Democrats to just decide to adopt the thing. So I hope that they do that. And I know even Senator Mark Mullett, he said he's very much in favor. There's a bill working its way through Olympia. He's very much in favor. He's a Democrat of trying to fix the police pursuit laws before voters even have to do it themselves. So again, and I know that this, you know, this started with a pursuit. So you had this trooper who was going to pursue this guy who ended up bailing out. But this isn't the importance of doing so, because you never know how dangerous the person is in one of those stolen vehicles. All right, we are going to continue this conversation around the types of criminals who are stealing vehicles and what they're using them to do. Man, there was a court hearing yesterday. I remember the case of the 12 and 13-year-old brothers who were out stealing cars at gunpoint. You'll never believe what a judge said about the 12-year-old in that case. We'll have it coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, I highly recommend getting it ready to hit the market before the Fed drops interest rates. Because once the Fed drops interest rates, whether it's going to be later on this spring or this summer, you're going to have this rush to the market of people who were just hanging out and waiting for those interest rates to drop. And you want to be ready to take advantage of that. Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. He said, although the Fed has been a little hesitant so far this year to bring interest rates down like they forecasted in December, because it's an election year, they're probably going to feel a little pressure to do so.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest, come on, they're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah, so be ready for it. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Ask Wes and his team about their Listing Boost Concierge service. It's a great service if you need to know, if you know you need to make cosmetic updates to your home so you can get the best possible offers for it, because they can manage those projects, like totally take care of it, even pay for it up front, which is really cool. And it's something that you're not going to see offered elsewhere. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. A judge has released a 12-year-old armed carjacking suspect from custody as long as he agrees to electronic home monitoring, in part because the judge said he is a good student. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boo. Not in the mood for a boop today with this. So I'll play the video again because we discussed this on the show a few days ago, but there was this wild situation in Seattle. You had two brothers, 12 and 13. They stole a car at gunpoint, like fired shots into the air, hit another vehicle, led police on a high-speed chase. They were using these untraceable ghost guns, which I don't hear a lot of examples of those actually being like used and captured in crimes, but that explains how they obtained them. It sounds like they were made by someone. So they released this video that shows them like driving erratically through Seattle and then, you know, fleeing. Yeah, they crashed the car, fled from it. They've got the guns in their hands, the ghost guns, and they were ultimately taken into custody. But it was obviously a dangerous ordeal, not just for the individual who was carjacked at gunpoint, but for everyone else who was on the roadways that day. Very much an adult crime. Their ages, while somewhat relevant to the conversation we're about to have, to me have no bearing on the seriousness of the crime. So they were in court, and there was, of course, arguments made around bail, which we're going to talk momentarily about. God, what do you do with a 12 and 13-year-old? What do you freaking do with a 12 and a 13-year-old? So this is a clip from Fox 13. They said the prosecution wanted both of them held because of a variety of factors, but the judge interrupted specific to the 12-year-old.
It appears to be engaged in some pro-social activities, including attending school and being a good student.
It appears, can you play that one more time, Nicole?
It appears to be engaged in some pro-social activities, including attending school and being a good student.
Appears to be engaged in some pro-social activities, including attending school and being a good student. I don't care. I don't care if he's a straight A student. 4.0. It doesn't change the fact that he committed, allegedly, armed carjackings and led police on a high-speed chase. The idea that that's even being uttered as an argument, how good of a student could he be, by the way? How good could the home environment be if you're a good student by day and then at night you're carjacking people with your big brother? Just wild when I saw that come out. I said, good student, pro-social activities. Isn't there a balance there? Like, okay, what kind of pro-social activities? And then don't you offset that with the very anti-social activities? It's wild sometimes listening to these judges when it comes to especially juveniles and where they're going to set bail. So just a little context before I play this next clip, because one of the first things we talked about is what's going on at home. I mean, that can't be a good home life if you've got a 12 and a 13-year-old brother who are out carjacking people at night. So according to MyNorthwest.com, the suspect's mom had actually called 911 8 minutes before the carjacking. But what's interesting is she reported to dispatchers on 911 that she had seen two boys walking on Aurora Avenue with guns, and that she observed one of the boys with the gun and that he put it into his jacket pocket. She didn't even say that they're her kids. I mean, I give her credit for calling 911, but she didn't say like, hey, I just saw my sons out with guns and they've left the home. Here's another clip from Fox 13.
I will keep him safe, so I think it's fine that he come home today.
Everybody talks about he's got a community support. I believe it, but that community was there when these incidents happened as well. And I cannot fail to acknowledge that.
So I'll give the judge credit. You've got this mom who she's calling 911 and saying, oh, there's two boys with guns, totally not my kids. And then she's in court saying, oh, you should release the 13-year-old home. Like, I think it's a safe environment. So I give the judge a lot of credit after her weird, he's a good student comment on the 12-year-old for saying, how can he be safe at home when under those same circumstances, him and his brother were out carjacking people at night? And so the judge did not feel so inclined with the 13-year-old, but there was this feeling that the 12-year-old was sort of doing what his brother wanted him to do, wasn't driving the car, but he still fired shots into the air. So I don't look at the 12 and 13-year-old as all that different. And the judge ultimately, the 13-year-old objection to release was successful, but for the 12-year-old, the judge is saying, oh, you can go home on electronic home monitoring. The only place he can go is school, etc. But it also sounds like one of the things that was discussed in court is that the dad of these two boys is contributing to their antisocial behavior. I asked you guys, though, in our daily subscriber show poll, because I struggle with this, I will acknowledge. I asked you whether you felt it was appropriate, feel that it is appropriate, given the 12-year-old's age, to release that child under the condition of electronic home monitoring. Most of you are saying, no, that's not the appropriate decision given the crime that occurred. Captain Cranky Pants says, committed a crime with a gun, should be doing hard time. Oh, wait, let me guess, it's the gun's fault. Deb says, tough to choose between these answers. Prolonged home monitoring for a 12-year-old would probably be more helpful, but only if there were a simultaneous requirement that a parent be held strongly accountable for his rehab. And that's what gets me here, is I don't know what environment would be worse for a 12-year-old. Juvenile detention, being held there, or being in a home environment that clearly is really unhealthy. Being back in a home environment where somehow it was so bad that you were out carjacking people at night. And I hate to say, well, maybe the child should be in the custody of the state. I mean, I don't think that's ever the best option. But between juvie hall or somewhere where you clearly don't have any sort of parental oversight at home, maybe the foster system at this juncture is the best place. So I really struggle with this one.
Liz, sure you could get a foster family to take him in.
Well, and that's the other thing is you're going to, yeah, that's, Liz says, I said no because I don't think the kids were being supervised well enough in the home. Again, yeah. And you know, electronic home monitoring, that works to a certain extent, but by the time they go do something, it's too late. Right. Like by the time if he's going to go do something and victimize more people, that's why I'm usually I don't think very highly of electronic home monitoring, because you can find out if they violated it, but you think that it's like, oh, he crossed this little threshold and beep, 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 and then they send the cavalry out to get him. No, you're going to find him eventually, but If they cut that thing off or do whatever and decide to go victimize other people, there's no preventing that. It doesn't prevent that. Jen says, absolutely not. What this just showed this teenager and others is that you can do a serious crime and get to go home. Yes, I know house arrest means he can't leave, but it doesn't mean that other people can come in and such. Also, it seems that he was in a home with little supervision and direction, and that staying home could actually be worse. And not only worse for the public, I kind of think worse for the 12-year-old.
Probably.
Worse for the 12-year-old to be in that environment and not to be in an environment with a little structure, even if that's one of these lenient juvie holes that they've got people, you know, locked up in awaiting trial. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I mean, it's crazy that we're even in this situation where we've got 12-year-olds committing crimes like this.
Definitely shouldn't be together. I think that was probably part 100%. Of the judge's decision was that she definitely didn't want them together. So I don't know. I struggle with it too, but I'm kind of on the side of us. With, you know, they shouldn't be together. So
yeah, shouldn't be together, but that doesn't mean you can't put them in different facilities or whatever it is. I mean, I think you would be able to do that, right? Or would you have to put them both in King County?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure the rules on that. So I understand that, but and then the parents have to be held accountable at some point to making sure that they're abiding by the conditions of release. Tough situation, but overall, the broader issue as a society, we have to figure out what's happening with these kids. This is not normal by any stretch of the imagination. Kids younger and younger committing more and more violent crimes. We have to do something about it. And it does start with, as one of our commenters alluded to, holding these young people accountable when it does happen. Remember we played you, gosh, this was a few months ago now, where I think it was a drive-by shooting and the 16-year-old was like, could not believe he wasn't going to get electronic home monitoring.
Right.
Was like shocked by it because my buddies did, you know, it's like, okay, well that stuff gets around. So let's reverse course a little bit. Let's throw the book at some of these juveniles and let them know that they're not going to be able to get away with these sorts of things. Okay. Unbelievable. All right. Coming up next, that sign stealing superintendent has been charged. Gives us another excuse to play the video of her yanking, allegedly, signs out of the ground. We'll talk about the charges that she is facing. First, if you are close to retirement, it's really important to start managing your risk. You worked hard for your retirement your entire life. There's no reason to put it at risk and not have someone managing that portfolio who recognizes the risk that exists out there in this environment. You know, you've got the stock market doing well, but then you've got companies, big companies like Amazon, REI, Microsoft, laying people off. Something does not compute there. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital has been talking about this and how it's really important to look at some of the economic indicators that others might not be paying attention to.
People go, well, it's a really strong economy. And you look at them and go, well, you're pumping $2.1 trillion into it a year,
yeah.
Right? So your definition of a strong economy isn't mine, right? You're looking at a four-banger, four-cylinder engine that they hooked up a nitrous oxide tank to, right, and pumped out 800 horsepower, and you guys all act like a miracle has happened, and now we're looking at a Chevy big block V8. No. It's just it's a four-banger on nitrous oxide, right? You pull that out of there, and it's going to decelerate. A lot of this, the vast majority of this economic strength is purely narrative and printed money.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you don't take on any risk. I mean, that's part of investing, right? But it does mean that you don't take on risk unnecessarily and that you move forward in a way where you're not blind to some of these other things that are happening out there that indicate that the economy is not as strong as some would lead you to believe. So with all that's happening, election looming, global unrest, rising cost of living, market fluctuations, it is critical to manage your risk in 2024. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham, the Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. He also hosts the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Their portfolio review is just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. You can schedule it right now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, the sign stealing superintendent, allegedly, is going to have her day in court. The news came down this morning. I saw it first reported on King 5 News. Dr. Lauren Evans has been charged with a misdemeanor after she was, I love this. I love that we have to say allegedly. Do we? Probably not on this show. She did it, okay? And Nicole, can we just play the video for folks? Because any excuse I can have to talk about the citizens who set up a game camera to see who was stealing their yard signs, and then here's this blonde lady yanking them out of the ground and stomping on them and hucking them into the woods. And you know, the kind of cherry on top of the ridiculous pie was that these were signs, of course, that were against a school bond that I believe officially failed by a lot.
And she sure helped it.
Yeah. So Dr. Lauren Evans, the superintendent of the North Kitsap School District, was in favor of this school bond. Rather than go out to community members and make her argument like a sane, rational adult, she went out there in the dark of night with her hood up and yanked out signs that were anti-bond signs. And so anyway, yeah, she has now been charged. I think that's appropriate. You know, she had denied doing this, which most people, when accused of the crime, probably would deny doing it, despite the preponderance of evidence gathered from these concerned citizens who got her on camera, who followed her truck, which belonged to her, who called 911. I'm actually surprised that it took so long. And she is on paid leave. I don't know if that status will change because she's officially been charged. I would find it highly unlikely that Dr. Evans would ever return as the superintendent of that particular school district. But we will, of course, be following this case. She better not get some deal. I'm sorry, but all like the Democrats who are, oh, democracy's at risk and all this stuff, even if it's like cases of voter fraud or whatever it is, book at them. The book has to be thrown at them because you have to set an example for stuff like this. You know, we need to follow up with the Costco lady in Issaquah who crossed out the page of signatures to see if they've moved forward with charges on her, because I know it's a nonviolent crime, but it's serious stuff, and you're disenfranchising people, and I hope that she has to spend some time in jail.
That's why it keeps happening. That's why this keeps happening.
Right.
Because they keep getting away with it. They think they have no, I mean, they're just like children. They think they have no consequences for their actions.
Because a lot of the times they don't.
They know.
So we're teaching kids, we're teaching adults, there's no consequences, but I think the fact that it was charged is a good thing.
Yep.
I want her to spend three hots on a cot. Three hots and a cot.
I don't even know that one.
Three hot meals and a cot.
Three hots,
you know?
And a cot. Okay. A
couple days. I think that's it. It's like a rap song,
something
right?
Like that. Okay.
Three hots and a cot or something. I don't know. Mm. You know, whenever I try to act cool, it just falls so flat. Yeah, I think it's a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
And I don't expect her to go to jail, but I do think a couple nights in jail would do her good.
Well,
teach some lessons.
It would be an example for all.
Yes.
And don't do this.
Don't, you know, the other effect that I hope this story has, because it has been pretty widely covered mm-hmm. in the media now, that anyone who goes to steal a sign is worried that they're like being caught on game camera.
Oh, I hope so.
I just hope that is in the back of would-be sign thieves' minds that, mm-hmm. oh, this might be on a game camera. So, good
love
stuff.
It.
Good update there.
We're
all right.
Always on camera.
Now to a story that is just infuriating me as the lies continue to come in on the Climate Commitment Act. You know, there's this initiative that would repeal it. The Climate Commitment Act is the carbon pricing auctions that have led to higher gas prices. And, you know, we have the lies being told by Democrats. We talked about one of them on the show earlier this week from State Senator Mark Elias, who says, oh, if voters repeal the CCA, we won't have money for bridge maintenance and road repairs, which no CCA money, not one dime, is allocated to bridge repairs and road maintenance. So that was just a flat-out lie. The weirdest stuff. But then, I mean, Democrats are freaked out about this. Don't get me wrong. They are freaked out about voters possibly repealing the CCA. We can see that. The lies show that, but also some of the scrambling that they're trying to do to, I guess, bribe people into not repealing it. It is wild to watch play out. So this story was first broke by Todd Myers, our friend over at the Washington Policy Center. The headline, proposed House budget promises $200 checks, but only if voters keep the CO2 tax. So we're going to have Todd on to explain all of this. But essentially, it does amount to an effort to bribe voters ahead of the November election, where the initiative to repeal the CCA will be on the ballot, by promising them checks, refund checks from all the money they've brought in through the CCA. But they're not going to give you those checks from money from an account they already have if you decide to repeal the CCA. I also wanted to ask Todd about another story that popped up, just a little bit of context here. People in the ag community were supposed to be exempt from the higher gas prices that resulted from the CCA, but that exemption was never carried out. So now, oh, timing is quite suspicious here. Now Democrats are like, oh, we better issue some refunds to all those farmers and ranchers, millions of dollars this year. We're finally going to do that after being told for years that you were supposed to do it. So here's Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center. Todd Myers, welcome back to Undivided.
Always nice to talk with you.
The people's champion. Who was that, The Rock? Was The Rock the people's champion? It's Todd Myers now.
People confuse me and The Rock all the time.
Oh, I can see that, totally. Well, don't say that, because I have a crush on The Rock, and that's my hall pass with my husband. So then he won't let us talk anymore, all of that. It'll be weird. So two things. One, I get really confused because you sent out this tweet saying that in their supplemental operating budget, Senate Democrats are setting aside $30 million to reimburse people in the ag community who had to pay this carbon tax but should have been exempt from it. What I get confused by is the governor says that the CCA didn't raise gas prices, so why would we have to reimburse people in ag for increased gas prices if the CCA didn't increase gas prices?
It's almost as if that claim wasn't honest in the first place.
Oh, that's so strange. Yeah, I want someone to ask Senate Democrats that. Like, hey, I don't get it. I thought that this wasn't a thing. So why are you giving them $30 million? Is $30 million enough?
No. And so in the CCA, the Climate Commitment Act, the CO2 tax, there's actually a clause that says that agricultural businesses, farmers, other folks will be exempt from paying the tax on CO2, which amounted to, in 2023, about 43 cents per gallon of gas and 53 cents per gallon of diesel. So diesel is much more expensive. A lot of farmers use the diesel. So that is in the law. Department of Ecology was directed to implement that exemption. They simply said, no, we're not going to do it. Now, I don't know how they can do that, but they just did. And then they sort of tried to pass it off on the oil companies, but the oil companies said, well, like, we don't know how to do it. If we do it and we hand you something, how do we know you're going to accept it? Only the Department of Ecology can do this, and they didn't. So for a year, agricultural businesses have been paying this extra tax that they're not supposed to by law. There's a variety of estimates. It's hard to pin down because, right, people aren't keeping their receipts. Some estimates are about between $125 and $150 million that they have paid. Now, that seems reasonable because the state has collected about $1.6 billion. And so what we're talking about is about 10% of that coming from agricultural businesses. But what they've offered is, instead of $125 or $150 million, $30 million. Now, how they came up with that number, they just made it up, right? They just said, well, let's throw them $30 million and see how we do. It still doesn't do anything close to implementing what the law is supposed to.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is you can give them some of this money back, but it sounds like they're going to continue to have that problem moving forward, that they're paying a tax that they're not supposed to be paying.
Exactly. And again, the money is in the state coffers. So agricultural businesses have paid this money through increased prices on gasoline. So the state has the money. They should give it back. They should, and as you say, ongoing, Department of Ecology should do its job and implement what the law says so that they don't have to keep paying this.
And also, like you said, it's complicated to figure out how much, because of receipts and all this, you know, how much was paid that shouldn't have been paid. How would they even propose doling out $30 million if it's hard to know how much they owe to individual farmers and the people in the ag community?
People would, you know, offer receipts or apply or something like that. But not everybody has every receipt that they, you know, have collected over the last year. So it's a very poor system. And you know, they need to fix this going forward.
Yeah, I mean, they could. My idea is they could just ask Attorney General Bob Ferguson's office to dole out the $30 million, because I hear he's really, really good at getting checks in the hands of people who they are rightfully belong to.
Yeah, there's one other thing I want to add, which is that unlike other businesses or oil companies or things like that who simply pass along the tax, right? That's what you want. The reason that gas prices went up is because, logically, if you add a tax, it gets passed on. Farmers can't do that. Farmers are price takers. There's a commodity market. So if you grow wheat, there's a commodity market. You sell your wheat at the price in the commodity market. You can't say, hey, I got to add because I paid more for diesel. It's just like, sorry, right? You get to get the price that everyone else gets for your commodity. So they're kind of in a bind where, unlike other businesses who can build those costs in, farmers really can't.
Yeah. A question on this that is going to segue into the next topic on this we're going to discuss. Is this just Democrats trying to appease people who are upset about the Climate Commitment Act since there's an initiative to repeal it?
I think that's probably part of it. It's an issue that's been going on. It was long before Initiative 2117. So they have been discussing it for a while. I do think this is sort of a cheap way to try to do it, which is just like, all right, here's $30 million. But it's not a new issue. And like I said, the Inslee administration could fix this tomorrow, right? The governor could say, Department of Ecology, you need to fix this.
Yeah.
He has. So I think that's a problem.
Yeah. So segueing into what I just, it seems like bribery. I mean, maybe you have a different interpretation of it, but House and Senate budget writers, again, on the Democratic side, they want to send residents $200 checks this year, and it would be from proceeds that have come in through the higher prices that people are paying at the pump. I guess, is this just a, hey, we got more money than we expected, so here's some of it back?
Well, maybe. I mean, right, that's a generous interpretation. So, you know, they expected to get, I think, if I remember correctly, between $200 and $300 million last year. They ended up getting $1.6 billion. So they got a lot of money on their hands. So $150 million of that, what they, the House and Senate, have offered to give back in the form of $200 checks to utility customers, starting with low income and then sort of moving up. They say low to medium, moderate income utility customers. Now, what makes it suspect is the timing. So in the Senate, what they say is that the checks have to go out in 2024.
Hmm.
Theoretically, they could go out, I suppose, in December of 2024 after the election, but I think that's probably unlikely. I think they want them to go out before the election. And in fact, the House is different. They specifically say that the first round of payments have to go out on October 15th, 2024, which is exactly 3 weeks before the election.
Stop. Right when people are getting their ballots.
Correct.
You cannot make this stuff up. Whose name would be on the checks?
So that's another thing is that it's unclear, but the budget in both the House and Senate say that the language, now what happens is that the state pays utilities and utilities give the bonus, give the checks to the utility customer. So it doesn't come directly from the state.
Okay.
But the language in both budgets specifically says that whatever language accompany those checks must be approved by the Department of Commerce.
There it is. Yep, there it is. And I imagine that if some Democrats are so keen on putting these checks in the hands of Washingtonians right at the same time they're getting their ballots in the mail, that language is going to be very, very specific toward what a wonderful thing this is that they're doing. Now, there's another wrinkle to this and another kicker, and that is that Democrats are saying that these checks would go out in a couple rounds, but the second round, they say they're going to cancel if voters pass the initiative to overturn the CCA.
That's right.
It sounds like a threat.
So the first round in the House version, $75 million, half of the $150 million, would go out 3 weeks before the election. The other half would go out in February of 2025, unless voters pass Initiative 2117, in which those checks are canceled. So there was a kerfuffle about this. Joe Fitzgibbon, who was one of the Democrat leaders, was asked about this. And he said, well, like, we can't promise to send money if we don't have the money, if they've repealed the CO2 tax. There's a problem with that. That's a lie. The money is already in the state coffers. Okay? They already have the money. This is not promising money that wouldn't exist. This is just saying, well, instead of giving it to you, we're just going to keep it for ourselves in the general fund and spend it how we want. How do I know this? Because the Senate spends all $150 million independent of whether the initiative passes. So the Senate says, well, yeah, we have the money. So here, we're going to give it out to as many people as we can. Only Joe Fitzgibbon is saying, we don't know if we're going to have the money. It's just dishonest.
Oh, it's a complete lie. And also, I would argue that it's even greater cause to give that money back to people if voters repeal the CCA. If voters say, we don't want this thing, you've got the money from the CCA sitting in an account, a program that now voters have repealed, it makes even more sense to keep giving that money back to them.
Right. Exactly. Why not just give back all the money that is still, that hasn't been spent? But, you know, they don't want to do that. They want to use it in whatever way they can to encourage people to keep it around. And again, this is a one-time payment. This is not, hey, every year you're going to get these $200 checks because we're making so much money. British Columbia has a carbon tax, a flat carbon tax, and they, as part of that law, they rebate back to the people of British Columbia. So what they say is, you know, you'll get the rebates, but if you use less gasoline and emit less CO2, then your tax will be lower, so you'll end up doing better. That's, there's the incentive there. So it can be done. You can say, look, if we get more than this, it goes back in the form of a tax rebate. They don't simply want to do it, and it's even worse than that. They want to use it to sort of tell people, do what we want, or we're going to keep the money.
Yeah, exactly. It's a form of bribery, a little bit of a threat there. And yeah, it's 100%, if you were going to do it on a continuing basis, then, and if it's repealed, then obviously you couldn't give rebates on a continuing basis for a revenue stream that's no longer coming in. But as you point out, that's not what's happening here. One more, I guess, point. You mentioned that Fitzgibbon, that's just a demonstrable lie to say, oh, we can't give refunds in 2025. You know, we don't have the money, because they do. We've seen so many blatant lies, though. I mean, I pointed out Senator Marco Elias, who's saying that if voters repeal the CCA, we might not have money for bridge maintenance and road maintenance in communities across the state. You know where the CCA money is going. Is any money from the CCA going to fix our bridges and roads?
No. In fact, the CCA, the CO2 tax, specifically says money cannot be used for 18th Amendment purposes. The 18th Amendment to the Washington State Constitution says that gas taxes go to road maintenance, road construction, bridge maintenance, those sorts of things. And the CCA specifically says you cannot use this money for that. So it's just not true.
Why do you think he does it? This is coming from his government social media account, and he continues to do it. I mean, how... Oh, it's such a frustration of mine, because I imagine he does it because he thinks he can get away with it. But how do we sort of help people see through these just lies?
Frustrating. I mean, it wasn't just that he like put it out. They created a graphic. Mm-hmm. Right? So they actually thought about, here's the argument we're going to make. Let's make a graphic, even though we know it's nonsense. Look, I've been in politics a long time. It is not a shock to me that politicians lie. It is a shock at how blatant the lies have become, where they're just completely made up. It is shocking to me that people keep going back to, right? This isn't the first time Joe Fitzgibbon has lied about this issue, the governor, Marco Elias, these folks. Look, there's a difference between having a difference of perspective. There are some people who just disagree with me because they think climate change is worth addressing. It's a risk. We need to do these things. Fine. We can disagree with that. That's not a lie. That's just a disagreement. It's a different opinion about risk tolerance. But what we're seeing, and the Marco Elias thing, is just dishonest. And it's very frustrating to me. And we can't make good policy. And I'll add one more thing, which is, there are things that I think we should do to fight climate change. There are things that are effective. But what I get back from people when I try to do a policy that says, look, I think this would work, is from people saying, yeah, Todd, but if we do that, politicians will just manipulate it and abuse it and screw it up. So why should we do anything? So it just lends to nihilism. So the people who say, well, I don't understand why climate change is, and the environment is so partisan, I'll tell them part of the reason is that when people like me say, you're right, let's address these issues, people on my side, people who traditionally agree with me, say, Todd, you can't trust anything they say. We can't do anything. And so it makes it hard for me to agree with the very people who are saying, why can't you help us address these problems?
Yeah, and I understand the skepticism from the right. I mean, you've covered this issue. We just talked about it on the show last week, how, you know, one of the things they're doing with these CCA funds, $70 million, they shut down a 2,000-acre working forest, and that would actually have a net negative on the environment and carbon sequestration. And it's like, okay, yeah. So you're doing something, a whole program designed to help the environment, and you're explicitly doing things that even the Commissioner of Public Lands, who's a Democrat, says, that's not going to help the environment, and you're doing it anyway. So it's hard to trust that they're going to actually spend money on things that'll help.
Oh, I get the skepticism. And when people push back on me on that, I get why they do it. I just think we can't succumb to nihilism.
Yeah.
Now, what my argument has been is that we need to push more power in the hands of individuals who have incentives to do the right thing, to, you know, benefit the environment, rather than hoping politicians will do the right thing, because we know the answer to that. They won't always. That's the strategy that I've used. But when it comes to policy, right, we're the Washington Policy Center. We're trying to find good policy. When it comes to policy, we can't just be nihilist and say, well, anything we do is going to get screwed up, so we should do nothing. No, we need to keep trying to do good policies, but we need to be really hard on the folks who make it difficult to do good policy by being dishonest. And there's a lot of dishonesty right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, you kind of built right up to it perfectly, Todd, so I can't have you on without pitching your book, which talks about those very ideas. So go ahead, we'll end there.
Yeah, so time to think small, right, rather than big government. Think small efforts. And it's remarkable. There's so many cool examples of people doing small things that add up to huge environmental impacts. The example I love to give is ocean plastic, where there's a program that basically pays people in developing countries to pick up plastic off the beach. They have picked up 2 billion pounds of plastic to keep it out of the ocean just by doing these things and using simple technologies. So the other thing I like about this is that, you know, your listeners, people come to me all the time and say, oh, my kids have just are in college and are telling me all about all the government things we need to do to help the environment. And so my book, I mean, the foreword is written by somebody from the World Wildlife Fund. These ideas appeal to people who care about the environment, people on the left who care about the environment, but are tired of government failure. And we see so much government failure.
Yeah. So what Todd's trying to say is buy the book for your high schoolers. Try to combat some of what they're hearing from other people. Buy the book for your college students. So Todd Myers, we always appreciate you and you pointing out some of these things that I think otherwise would go unnoticed.
It's always nice to talk with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
There he is, Todd Myers. And you're talking about too, I mean, we don't need any more smoking guns on the whole Climate Commitment Act is increasing gas prices. We've had as many smoking guns as any person needs to prove that the governor is lying about that. But the whole ag exemption is in and of itself a smoking gun. Why would you have to exempt ag from paying higher gas prices if the CCA doesn't raise gas prices? That makes no sense. But also these checks, blatant bribery, and also the threat of punishment to want to send out checks just when people are getting their ballots in October, when the initiative to repeal the CCA is going to be on the ballot, and then saying, and we won't send out the second half of the checks if you guys repeal the CCA, they should be sending out all the money. They should send all the money back to people if we repeal the CCA. This is crazy. And I mentioned Mark Elias there. Mark Elias is still tweeting out lies, demonstrable lies about what transportation projects might be hindered if you repeal the CCA. And it's even worse because now he went from, you know, these broader lies about, oh, bridge maintenance and repair and road maintenance in every community. Now he's zeroing in on, he's like, it's like they've got all these created and he's just pushing them out every day. Now he's saying that if you repeal the Climate Commitment Act, it could put at risk projects such as the widening of SR-18 near Snoqualmie, which is this huge frustration for everyone on Snoqualmie Ridge. That has nothing to do with CCA funding. That's not being funded by the CCA. So now that's what they're going to do. He's going to go around and they're going to put out all these false lies about a road project near you that's going to be screwed if you repeal the CCA. It is not true. this should be he should be able to be recalled. Be able to be recalled for telling that many lies?
I think
on your government Twitter.
I guess I don't see why not. But we had Todd Welch just wrote that he tweeted at Marco, and Marco told him that he just doesn't know transportation if he disagrees.
It's insane. So
at somewhere he's connecting those. Maybe it's he's saying you have to pull money and put it somewhere else. Maybe you have to say he'll find some way to excuse his lies.
Well, the way he's framing it, just so you know, because we talked about it on the show, was it yesterday, the day before? So you've got this big pie of transportation money. And the CCA money coming in made that pie even bigger, okay? Because there's like almost $5 billion in CCA funds that are going to transportation-related projects. However, it didn't take away. So the transportation-related projects that CCA is paying for are climate-related transportation projects, like electrifying the ferry fleet and giving people grants for bike paths and pedestrian, whatever it is, stuff that they think will improve the climate. So if you take that CCA funding away, you just go back to the same size pie we had before. You don't then keep the pie just as big and take money from things like bridge maintenance and put it toward electrifying the ferry fleets. Now, if you're saying you're going to do that, Marco, that's deeply concerning. You're saying you would let a bridge go unrepaired if you could fund a bike lane project? Of course not. You can't do that. So that's what he's saying, is they like this big, fat, meaty pie, a meat pie, pork pie that they've created.
Pork pie.
With all this transportation money, they don't want to get rid of anything in the pork pie. They don't want any ingredients to come out. Not the climate ones. And so they're just acting like, hey, if you pull any money from our pork pie, we can't pay for the basics. And that's a effing lie. It's crazy. Marco, you should lose your job over this. The lies are that bad. And I mean, I'm used to politicians lying, and I don't come on here and say that every politician who lies should be recalled. I genuinely think that that would be grounds for a recall to continue to lie even after it's been shown with, I mean, Rep. Drew Stokesbury, the House minority leader, he sent out the line by line of CCA money that's going to fund transportation projects, and none of it is going to fund what Marco Elias is saying it's going to fund.
Did you see Marco's response to that list? He says defunding our transportation would be a devastating choice. Cutting $5 billion from transportation would mean cuts to everything. And then he goes on to say the ferries have been part of our highway system since 51, and we know that.
Yes. But well, I saw that because we read that on our show, Nicole. Do you watch the show?
No, I do. I'm just kidding. We read that one.
Yes, his response to Drew. But yeah, that's the point I'm making, is that's his lie about the big pie.
Well, I know, but
we're bifurcating. We're taking out transportation money that's specific to climate projects that they just started funding.
No, but I'm saying he's responding to that
with another lie.
Well, with just a derailment, I think. He's not even responding to it. It's just, here, let me comment on this instead.
Yeah, and again, if you don't understand my lie, then you're just stupid. If you don't get my blatant lie, then you're just a dumb. Oh my gosh. Okay, we got a good national story. I thought I'd mention Let's Go Washington is holding a rally this Friday. Speaking of the initiatives and all these lies and everything, man, you've got all these lawmakers lying. You've got to get out there, and the voice of reasonable, sane people need to be heard. So Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington, they're going to have an initiative this Friday at noon on the north steps of the Capitol to try to keep up some of this momentum with the initiatives. Three of them are going to get hearings next week. So far, the other three are not, and we just expect that those will go to voters. So if you can make it to Olympia Friday at noon, I do plan to be there. Our friend John Carlson over at KVI will be there, along with a lot of volunteers. You're encouraged to wear green and black, which are Let's Go Wah colors. Nicole, verdicts out on whether you're coming. I don't think you are.
Well, if I get out of my dentist appointment in time.
Oh, apparently making sure her teeth don't fall out is more important than saving the state.
I'm a teeth
no,
person.
No, I'm kidding. So if you would like to attend, and Brian Haywood wasn't at the last one that we held because he was in Japan. So here we are holding a rally for his initiatives. The guy's not even here. Mm-hmm. So we have another one. They're having another one on Friday. And I will just be a little fly on the wall for it. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how many people we can get there to the Capitol on a Friday. I'll say, I just saw this one of those anti-Semitic rallies at the Capitol, and they had like 500 people. If we can't get more people than the anti-Semites, we're screwed.
And the strippers.
Absolutely.
The strippers had quite a
few,
too.
The strippers, I mean, yeah, they could really rally the troops and rally the strippers on short notice.
Well, maybe that should be the attire code.
Well, let's invite the strippers. I'm sure the strippers don't want to be paying more taxes and all this stuff, too.
There we
should just invite them. Okay, it is really important right now, given everything we've talked about with crime and stolen vehicles and insurance rates going up, to have someone who can help you navigate the market. I've been a member of the First Mark Insurance family now for about a year. I took the First Mark Challenge with Mike back in the spring of 2023, and I'm so glad I did. I mean, here's a company that does this for you for free. They're going to go out, they're going to shop the market, they're going to make sure not only you have the best insurance to cover your needs, but that you can afford it and that you have the best price for that insurance. And it takes so much off your plate, I'll tell you. And even today, you know, they're constantly out there just making sure that we have the best price, that we have what we need with our changing lives, et cetera. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum, they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated, and there's no reason you need to spend your valuable time shopping around insurance companies when First Mark Insurance will do it for you for free. So take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, really quickly, one story out, international story, I guess. So this clip to me, and I'm going to play, I think we're playing the whole thing, right, Nicole? Because I watched it, I was like, wow, that speaks to everything that's, you know, wrong with our political discourse, everything that's wrong with the media, everything that's wrong with TDS type 1, Trump derangement syndrome type 1. That's the type of Trump derangement syndrome where everything Trump related ruins your life and you just can't be happy if Trump exists on this planet. So anyway, you might recall there was a story about Trump sneakers, like these gold sneakers that people were buying that are like Trump.
They're freedom sneakers.
Freedom sneakers. Something. And so there was an auction for a pair of these freedom sneakers that were signed by Donald Trump. And so they went for $9,000. So when this guy, whose name is Roman Scharf, paid $9,000 for these Trump autographed freedom sneakers, the media went crazy over it. And they labeled him like a Russian oligarch, and because that's great, right? Like, oh, Russian guy pays $9,000 for sneakers, like Trump's a tool of the Russian government. This is a New York Post article. Russian CEO wins autographed golden Donald Trump sneakers after $9,000 bid. And that was one of the more tame headlines. A lot of the headlines were just vilifying this guy as like some rich, weirdo Russian oligarch who just wanted to get in Trump's good graces, so he bought some Trump sneakers. Except he's from Ukraine. He's not Russian. And a lot of the stuff that was spewed about him is just simply not true. And it's because when there's anything related to Trump, or Republicans for that matter, you have the media that already, you know, really dislikes him. And so they rush to assume the worst in people and to paint people in the worst way. So Roman Scharf comes out and he does this video responding to all these crazy headlines about him. And I was hanging on every single word he said. And so I want to play the video back for you in full.
So, bought a pair of sneakers, these sneakers, and apparently they made me a Russian oligarch overnight. Here's how. Guys, I'm a sneakerhead. I'm also a U.S. Army veteran, and yes, I am a Republican. The title of the article read, "A Russian oligarch spends $9,000 on sneakers to support Trump." Sounds sketchy, but I actually came from Ukraine. At the time, it was part of the Soviet Union. I came here at the age of 13 as a refugee, but my dad had $4 in his pocket. I busted my ass working every dirty job under the sun to get where I am today in order to be able to afford to buy these $9,000 pair of collectible sneakers. But I guess the headline of Russian refugee, Ukrainian refugee, or perhaps maybe just a man, that would not get as many clicks as a Russian oligarch. I even saw a tweet from a Ukrainian patriot that said, a Russian shady watch dealer bought $9,000 pair of sneakers as a way to move money to Russia somehow. Of course, I kindly asked the author to check the fact that my own charity raised over $250,000 of aid to Ukraine since that war has started before putting out accusations of stupid tweets, if you will. I wasn't trying to make a political statement by buying these shoes. Of course, the internet blew up. I'm getting comments and messages from on IG from people saying, oh, I am no longer following you, or I'm unfollowing you because you are a Trump supporter and I'm no longer doing business with you. It's funny, here I am, maybe I'm silly. I thought that people done business with Luxury Bazaar because we've been in business for 21 years because of trust, because of personalized customer service that we provide and great pricing. But I guess I was wrong. You know what saddens me the most about this whole situation is that over something as stupid as a pair of sneakers, it showed me so clearly once again on just how divided our country is. With that said, guys, there's not a mean tweet in the world. There's not an IG post. There's not a news article that's going to stop me from being who I am. And that is a patriot of this country, a country that once let in a 13-year-old immigrant and gave me the opportunity to be where I am today. And I'm going to be thankful for that for the rest of my life. You want to hate me for wanting this country to be great again? Go ahead and judge the sneakerhead. But no matter what, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May sound cliche, but that's how I feel. Thank you, and God bless America.
How great is that guy?
He likes a pledge.
Well,
I like him even more.
But also, I think to very methodically, but also take the high road in responding. You know, he could have come out there and bashed the people who said all these things about him, but he just very calmly explained, you know, none of these posts, nothing you can say is going to change who I am. I wrote down one of his lines, over something as stupid as a pair of sneakers, that showed me how divided our country is. But it was about more than the sneakers. It was about, oh, they're signed by Donald Trump. Oh, we think he's Russian. This guy who immigrated to this country at 13 years old with no money to his name was able to, yes, make a lot of money in this country and live the American dream. A guy who helped raise money to donate to the war effort in Ukraine. And not on the Russian side, for Ukrainians, to see him vilified so quickly without anyone doing their due diligence to look into who he was, his story, where he made his money, how he made his money, and all of these things, and the charities he supported, just shows that TDS still reigns supreme. TDS, for the media, takes precedence over everything else, and it just shows us that we can vilify our fellow human beings over perceptions of them that aren't based in reality, not even a little bit. All right, let's get to some questions and comments from the live stream, shall we? On the suspect in the shooting of a Washington State Patrol trooper, Liz Huston said, I do not understand our justice system. You get to turn someone's life upside down and basically walk away. On the kids, well, hopefully he can't walk away. I mean, he's facing charges, so we'll see how severe the punishment is for him. On the 12 and 13-year-old, Shirley Lopez says, on the 12-year-old being called a good student, and that's the reason why the judge is going to say, oh, you can be at home on electronic home monitoring because you're a good student. This is my favorite comment. Kathy Carr, Ted Bundy was also a good student.
Yeah, lots of
Ted Bundy
bad
was also a good student.
Are really smart.
Yeah, Shirley Lopez says, a good student would learn well from swift consequences.
And I'll also say right now, it's not hard to be a good student because you really, there's no grades. There's no, all you have to do is show up once in a while. Yeah. You don't even have to show up most of the time.
No one can fail.
No one can fail. It's like pass or fail, but that's not really an option.
Yeah. Tracy says, you know, it also gives gang members more reason to seek out minors to commit crimes for them since the minors won't get in trouble. And that's absolutely what they do. You know, in some of these, the string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans reminds me of that situation because it was the youngest suspect who did the most severe aspects of the crime. And that's because they knew that. The older criminals who've been doing it for a long time, they knew that the system would give this guy a slap on the wrist and then they could get off scot-free.
Yep.
Let me see here. Captain Cranky Pants. Couldn't he still be a good student behind bars? Arguably an even better student. He'd have nothing but time to do his homework, right? On Todd Myers and these bribes that Democrats are trying to put out in the form of checks right before the election to try to get you not to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. Repeal it. Repeal it. Liz says, give you a little money now so they can take more later. Yeah, so they can take more from you every single year that you live in Washington State, every time you go to the grocery store, every time you fill up your gas pump. $200 now is not worth the thousands of dollars that you will pay into that program.
Again, they're calling you stupid for not realizing that.
Right. They do think you're stupid.
They think 100%. You're stupid. And that's the gas, the money that you would save in a summer. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe less.
We'll read one more. Oh, Sharon says, Marco Liars is still posting his crap as of about 30 minutes ago. Yeah, I saw that.
It's on his official.
On his official, yeah. Because he has two accounts. And that makes it even worse. It's on his official account. Y says, it's a bribery check, not a refund check, if they are not going to give it, if you vote to repeal the carbon tax. Is that even legal? Government is becoming shadier by the minute. Not just government in particular, government without a check and balance. One-party rule. Only in a situation where one party has unchecked rule do they believe they can get away with this. They don't believe there are electoral consequences for them because there haven't been. They've been in charge of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. Governor's office for 40 years, the House and the Senate, a complete trifecta for the last 8 legislative sessions. So they have gotten to the point where they're kind of right. They can lie. They can do stuff like this and not have electoral consequences. This is the year where we have to show them that those electoral consequences still exist because they need to fall back in line and remember who they work for, which is us. All right, let's get to our thank you for the good comments today. Let's get to our closing sanity check, which I hate to say I told you so. So I think our conversation around this really started in Oregon where there were some foster parents who weren't going to be able to adopt a kid because they wouldn't promise that if this child later on in life wanted to change their gender, that they would acquiesce to it and like get them surgery. And then in Washington State, of course, we've talked about all these things happening around mature minors and the ability of minors to run away to a shelter and be hidden from their parents while they pursue, you know, gender hormone therapy and all of these things. And the common thread there is the government treating you like a bad parent if you don't buy into the gender ideology. And I've said, I think it's only a matter of time before they take your kids away if you don't. Because, again, I go back to Senate Bill 5599 in Washington State, where now in Washington State there are two reasons where your child could run away and the government will not tell you where they are. One, if you're abusing them, which I think makes sense. And two, if you don't want them to get like these gender hormone therapies or protected health care. So now, and what I said then is, now not wanting your child to get hormone therapy is deemed just as bad as beating your child in the eyes of the government. So if they take away your child from you for beating them, why wouldn't they take your child away from you for not letting them get hormone therapy? That's a natural course of events in the direction that we're heading. And it's happening in the state of Illinois. So Democrats in Illinois, from our friend Billboard Chris, they are trying to change the definition of what it means to be an abused child. And they want to change it to include parents who don't support certain types of gender care for their kids. Billboard Chris writes on X, the state of Illinois wants to change the term of abused child to mean any child whose parent won't agree to a sex change. Parental consent for puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries will not be needed. Parental consent for puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries will not be needed. And get this, doctors, quote, shall not incur civil or criminal liability for failure to obtain valid consent or professional discipline for failure to obtain valid consent if the healthcare professional relied in good faith on representation made by the minor. This is going to happen if we don't stop it now. And that's one of the reasons I was so passionate about 5599. There's a parental rights initiative that's going to get a hearing in Olympia next week. And some people might look at these things and say, oh, you're overblowing it. You know, the government isn't going to hide people from their kids. The government's not going to take kids from their parents over gender hormone therapy. They're not. This has been a slow and steady push. 5599 is still in effect. What do you think is going to come after 5599? And after that. So these things have to stop now. Parents who have not found their voice and have not found the bravery needed to speak up about these things have to start speaking up about it now. Or it's going to be your family, no matter how good of a parent you think you are, no matter how good you think your kids are, it's going to be your family that is impacted next. And that is your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Don't forget to check out our merch store, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We're trying to move studios soon, and man, it'd be nice to unload that merch so we don't have to move it. We don't want to move it from place to place, you know? Why would we want to do that? Well, we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon. Okay, boop.